One day last week, I was sitting around the house, had gotten roughed up by a trip to the doctor that morning, so I was looking for all the distraction and comfort I could find and flipped on the TV. One has to escape into nothingness there. And what should be on for the movie but Galaxy Quest? I hope some of you at least are familiar with Galaxy Quest. It was made in about 20 years ago. Tim Allen plays the lead character. It's a parody of Star Trek. And in the story, the defunct cast of a former television series is brought together by a bunch of aliens who had been watching their show on broadcast across the galaxy and had built their entire culture on the episodes of their series. Only they invented all the stuff that the TV show had imagined. Does this ring a bell at all for some of you? And they are in a desperate situation and they need the help of Tim Allen and his crew. I mean, it's a great cast, Sigourney Weaver and Alan Rickman, and they get into the action and they do some of the things from the former television series, and it is a great sort of reprise of some of the silliest things on Star Trek. And then they get captured by the bad guys. And the bad guys make Tim Allen explain to his alien friends that it was all just a television show. It was entertainment. That he's not the captain of a real starship. That he's an actor. And they don't understand acting. They don't understand fiction. The bad guy says, explain it to him as if he were a child. And finally, in this really wonderful meditation that Tim Allen is doing in the middle of this little show about what's real and what's not, he says, we're actors, we're liars. And it really makes you think for a moment about how much of our culture is built on fabrication and a tissue of poses that we take to create an identity that may or may not be us. The reality is we all wear masks and we all fake it. We fake it, we hope till we make it, but we fake it. Our masks hide our fears and our arrogance and our inflated egos. And we pretend to be nice guys and gals. And that's really better than being an honest jerk. I mean, even Immanuel Kant said, hypocrisy is the courtesy that vice pays to virtue. We don't want to live in a society that is honestly vicious, although we're getting there. But to be asked to take the mask off and show ourselves as we really are, a morass of confusion and fear and anxiety and ambition and outright unbridled appetite and lust, is not something we want to do with pretty much anybody. Well, Jesus sees the rich young ruler. We call him rich because it shows that in this version. In Matthew, he's young, and in Luke, he's a ruler, so they cram it all together. And the story's called The Story of the Rich Young Ruler, comes rushing up. He's been obviously a success in life, but he presents this existential anxiety to Jesus. Lord, what do I have to do to gain eternal life? And Jesus sees underneath his masks, sees underneath the fabricated identities, sees someone who is adding the religion merit badge to his long trail of successes. He says, "Who are you trying to kid? Don't call me good. God alone is good. Just do the commandments." You notice that Jesus only lists, what, five of them? And he makes one up. Do not defraud is not in Deuteronomy. Which means that Jesus had observed a lot of people doing a lot of defrauding. And the guy comes back to him, pretty disingenuous. "Oh, I've kept all the rules, I've kept all the laws, I'd do that." And Jesus knows him for what he is, but he loves him. He loves this person who is fooling himself about a lot of stuff. And I have always imagined that there is a line that was left out in the written document where Jesus turns to him and looks him deep in the eye and says, "Well, if you want to be perfect, sell everything you got and come and follow. You want to be perfect? You want to be absolutely the single most three-bar Eagle Scout in the world? Give it up." And the guy craters. He goes away sorrowing, for he has great wealth. That's the place we all choked this morning, didn't we? Parts of our anatomy clenched when we got to that line. Nobody wants to do that. The world Jesus lived in was the same as our world today. Both Jew and pagan assumed that great wealth was a sign of God's blessing. Prosperity gospel was nothing new to them. And when we get later on to the disciples saying, "Well, who can go to heaven if the rich guys can't?" We're seeing exactly that same mentality. "What do you mean I can't buy my way in?" But Jesus wants more than this boy's money. He wants the whole of him. It'd be easy to turn this thing into one of the Every Member Canvas sermons. To say that if you just give your 10%, God will be totally happy with you and you've got free run with the rest of it. When I was in Beaumont, I had three people I wanted to be the chairman of my Every Member Canvas: Shirley Ashworth and John Goodhue and Pat Murphy. And our theme was going to be, "Shirley, Goodhue, and Murphy will follow you all the days of your life unless you turn in your pledge card." Never could get them to sign up for that. Vestry thought it was funny. But if we turn our consideration of our gifts to the church, of our donations to charity, of our generosity with the rest of the world, even our generosity with God, into a pursuit or a transaction or a deal, we are doing the same stuff the rich young ruler is doing. We're looking for merit badges rather than realizing that everything we are, everything we might ever want to be, and certainly everything we have is a gift of God, a true gift of God, that it already has belonged to Him from before we were born. And that what He seeks from us is a return of ourselves, which our money and our time and our talents are only a token, a mere portion of all that we owe to the One who made us. What Jesus says to the rich young ruler, give all that you have, sell it, give it to the poor, and come and follow me, is an invitation not to poverty, but to freedom. Give everything you have and everything you are to God, and you will finally, truly know what it is to be His child. Because you will receive back more than you could ask or imagine. In practical terms, it does not mean for most of us that we will sell all that we have and go and follow Him or be a monk or whatever. At the best, I think John Wesley had it right when asked what to do about money. He said, make all you can, save all you can, and give all you can. Each of those actions, the work that brings in revenue, the saving for contingencies and times forward, and the giving generously of what we have until it hurts, are all the sacramental acts of those who know they are one with the Father in His family. Families don't keep books on each other. Or the ones that do need to stop it. Jesus wants all of you. Jesus will not be satisfied till you belong to Him, body, mind, spirit, material possessions, aspirations, desires, hopes, loves. He wants all of you. Your pledge is only but a start to that. But it is an important beginning. We owe everything. We have been given everything. Christ is everything. Now to share a reflection on our pledge and the Every Member Canvas, I want to call on Matt Zell, who has a very fine talk, to share with you his reflections and meditations. Matt, thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, 10:30 service, for taking a few minutes to listen to my short rant. I've condensed it from about 10 note cards to about 3. So I've been asked to talk about my personal walk and our family's personal walk, especially with regards to giving. Again, my name is Matt Ezell. My wife, Michelle, and I have been members here since 2012 or 2013. Both of our sons, Easley and Cooper, have been baptized here. I'm in my second year on the vestry. I'm in my second year on the St. James School Board, and we do not tithe to the church. It seems odd to say that. I grew up in the church since I was a kid. I grew up in the Presbyterian Church in the Houston area. And even through all of my church involvement through the years, I always thought that tithing meant making a pledge. But until this summer, when I went to a conference in San Antonio, the Abide in Me conference, I felt like I was the only one in the room that didn't know that a tithe literally means 10% of something. And so in this case, 10% of your income. So when we found Good Shepherd, we really loved Good Shepherd. We loved the people. We loved the message. We loved starting our faith life together as a newly married couple. And we were in what you could call a subscription mode. We really liked it. And we threw a few dollars in the offering plate. And that was great. That was a good start. Then, when Easley was big enough to go to the nursery, we talked about starting to pledge and how much that should be. Our first pledge was $10 a week. And now, looking back, that seems like a pledge that my five-year-old would make, 10 bucks a week. But at the time, I had just left a really good job and started my own company, and Michelle had decided to stay home with Easley. And I remember thinking, 10 bucks a week, I might have to go deliver pizzas one night a week or something. But I didn't. We made it through. And $10 a week, by the way, was what we thought it was worth to put Easley in the nursery for an hour. And we could just sit in the pew and listen. It was really nice. What a great intro to pledging. And we felt like we had made this commitment for the first time as a couple, as a married couple, as a family, to give $10 a week. And it was something funny happened. As soon as we started pledging, my business was probably a year old at the time, and that year our sales doubled. And I thought, surely this is a fluke. I've heard about this before, that if you give, you get back tenfold. So we doubled our pledge the next year, and earnings doubled in the company. And I'm blown away. I'm like, all right, I'm in, I'm feeling this. And this is not a coincidence. Our faith grew. And in perfect timing for getting us through in around that same time, we were getting the financial benefit, but our faith was also growing. So to have both in perfect timing for 2015, the Wimberley flood, and for some challenges growing our family and some other family health challenges, God knew what we needed before we even knew. And to be able to develop that faith is really what helped us make it through that hard time. We needed to grow in faith to get through these challenges. And as we kept increasing our pledge, we kept getting back tenfold. We're now in, I guess you could say, the high end of what could be called dues-paying giving, the dues-paying mode. At the Abide in Me conference, one of the speakers said that the average household giving is $100 a month. $1,200 a year in any church, in any city, in any state. And that he equated that with dues paying. So somebody who might join the country club or join the yacht club or go to Rotary every Thursday pays about $100 a month. And so the $1,200 a year is average, and he compared that with other organizations that people really care about and really want to give to. But, you know, that begs the question with me, is Good Shepherd, is it just a country club or a yacht club or a Rotary club, or is it a whole life, whole family transformation of faith? The main speaker at the conference in San Antonio, Bishop Rickle. He was from Washington, the Seattle area. And he said that he once had a parishioner come up to him after his service, after his sermon at the Commitment Sunday, and ask to have her pledge card back. And he thought, well, I've messed this up. I was supposed to celebrate the gifts, and she's coming to take her card back. So he asked her why she had had a change of heart, thinking she had decided not to pledge. She explained that she just realized that he had buried her father, married her and her husband, baptized her children, and she had been giving more to her housekeeper than she had to the church. And she wanted to drastically increase her pledge this year. That was a really powerful message to me, that this is a whole life, whole family, transformative faith experience. On the other hand, I believe, and I know the church believes, that if you pledge what you're able to do, and you do it with cheerfulness and eagerness and prayerful consideration, then that gift is always acceptable in God's eyes. I also believe that you reap what you sow, and I've seen this work time and time again in our family. As we give, we get back. That's why this year we will drastically increase our pledge from last year, because we know the more we give, the more we get, the more we grow in faith. We will still be less than halfway to a true tithe of 10%, like the Bible calls for. But we have been stepping up, and we will continue to step up our pledge every year. I would encourage you all to prayerfully consider what sacrifice you can give back for God's blessings and for the work of the Church of the Good Shepherd in the form of an increased pledge this year. Thank you.